Reclamation with Jim Berger's discussion on some of his work on looking at various growth media and mine reclamation.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Good morning, everyone. I'd first like to recognize U.S. Department of Energy and the Office of Surface Mining, the organizations that that funded this research, and also Julia Showalter, the first author, on whose behalf I'm making this presentation. This work was part of Julia's master's thesis when she was working at Virginia Tech. She's now a PhD student at the Soil and Water Science Department at the University of Florida. Julia says hi, and she regrets not being able to be here. There's a couple of reasons why I think Julia's work is important, and it's very similar to the rationale that Curtis DeLong just presented, but I will reinforce that rationale. First is that the extent of the landscape that is being disturbed, that is the native hardwood forest being disturbed in the process of mining, is really quite large in the Appalachian region. The Office of Surface Mining estimates that there's about 650,000 hectares that have been disturbed over the last several decades. The forest is removed, the soil is removed and buried, and for the most part, so are the parent materials from which the soils were derived. And our surveys over the years have shown that forest productivity, even on the reclaimed land, has been fundamentally degraded, despite the law that requires that pre-mining capability be restored. There are a lot of landowners, as Curtis mentioned, that are interested in restoring both the diversity and the productivity of the native hardwood forest, but it has been difficult over the years because of poor mine soil quality. In the process of mining, the geologic overburden is essentially inverted because that's the most efficient way of doing it. And as I mentioned, in the process, the original soils are buried. And the unweathered rock materials that are deep in the profile, closer to the coal seam, are usually the ones that end up on the surface. And they're used as the topsoil substitutes into which trees are planted. But it's very often a hodgepodge of materials that end up on the surface, which is evident from that finished valley fill. Let's see. Oh, yeah, okay, I do have a... You see the finished valley fill there on the right-hand slide, or the portion of the slide, showing different materials that ended up on the surface. The darker materials are carbonaceous shales that are often found close to the coal seam. The lighter material, unweathered primarily sandstones. And the brown materials are weathered sandstones closer to the original surface. Trees are planted into those materials, but because they have very different physical and chemical properties, you can expect that tree productivity would be quite different. Again, as Curtis pointed out and demonstrated in his study. So the objectives of Julia's greenhouse pot study were to determine which and if soil properties influence native hardwood tree growth, and determine if topsoil amendment improves mine soil quality. Here's another section of a geologic profile in the process of mining. What Julia did was collect materials from these different strata, original A-horizon topsoil, brown weathered sandstone in the next layer, unweathered sandstone, and then unweathered shale found fairly close to the coal seam. Again, all of these materials will end up on the surface, but primarily it'll be the unweathered sandstones and shales. So she put those four materials into pots, half of which, 2.5 centimeters of the original A Horizon soil material was added. Three different tree species were planted in those pots: tulip poplar, northern red oak, and white ash. So this was a 4x2x3 factorial arrangement pot study in the greenhouse, and those treatment combinations were replicated 10 times. This just shows randomly arranged treatment combinations on the greenhouse bench just before the study was begun. And she did run this study for one growing season, after which these trees were harvested and measured and analyzed. I'll show you this slide because this is the way the next several data slides are going to be arranged. And it's also important for you to remember those abbreviations at the top. FT is the forest topsoil, WS, weathered sandstone, US, unweathered sandstone, UH is the unweathered shale. And the bottom row of pots depict how the 2.5 centimeters of topsoil was added to the surface, and that amended topsoil was the same as the forest topsoil in the upper left-hand pot. This is showing incremental biomass after that first growing season. Shoot biomass at the top and root biomass on the bottom for each of the three species. The white ash was most responsive, doing best on the forest topsoil, followed by the weathered sandstone. The northern red oak actually did a bit better on the weathered sandstone, and the tulip poplar didn't do very well in any case. This is just showing a representative sample of the white ash shoot and root growth across that gradient of different mine soil types. And this graph is showing the incremental tree height as a function of topsoil being added to the surface. The middle two responses, weathered sandstone and unweathered sandstone, you see no effect of additional topsoil being added to the surface. However, the unweathered shale, the trees across all three species did respond to the addition of topsoil on the unweathered shale. So incremental biomass was correlated with a suite of physical, chemical, and biological properties. Those that were significant are listed in this table. They include percent fines, positively correlated with incremental biomass, water retention, again positively correlated, pH and soluble salts were negatively correlated with tree growth, exchangeable acidity, available nitrogen, and a number of biological indicators were all positively correlated with tree growth. And if we look at those properties across the different soils and mine soil, topsoil substitutes, you see the weathered sandstone had the highest fine soil fraction, even higher than the forest topsoil, which was skeletal throughout the profile. Water retention was highest in the forest topsoil, followed by the weathered sandstone. Again, the question was asked earlier when Curtis made his presentation, what soil properties, why might that weathered sandstone, or what particular properties might convey or be conducive to tree growth? I think we're looking at two of the physical properties that play a role. Furthermore, chemical properties, the pH of the weathered sandstone was similar to that of the forest topsoil, and the unweathered spoil materials were quite alkaline at pH 8. the soluble salts on the bottom left. Again, the weathered sandstone was lowest. That's a good thing, because in other work we find that soluble salts at a level of about 0.4 decisiemens becomes growth limiting. The extractable nitrogen highest on the forest topsoil, as you'd expect, but next highest on the weathered sandstone. The biological indicators were also positively correlated to tree growth. And as you would expect, the microbial biomass increased when topsoil was added. On the far right-hand side, you see the mean values, about twice the microbial biomass when topsoil was added. And there was a topsoil addition spoil type significant interaction with the other biological indicators, but basically what we can generalize is that the weathered sandstone is a more agreeable medium for the propagation of soil microorganisms and their activity. So we concluded from this greenhouse pot study that weathered sandstone was the better topsoil substitute for tree growth than either unweathered sandstone or shale because of its lower coarse fragment content, higher water retention, and lower pH and soluble salt levels. Available soil nitrogen was a bit higher, but the other available nutrients really weren't different among the other soil types. The topsoil amendment improved tree growth on the shale spoil and increased soil microbial establishment in all spoils. You can read more about these results. This paper will be published in the next issue of the Journal of Environmental Quality. But what you won't read in that publication, and what you should know, is the outcome of this work, as well as the work by Curtis and his research team and a number of other folks in adjacent states that are doing work on topsoil substitute selection for forestry. The good news and the outcome of these studies is that forest-specific criteria for mine soil selection and placement are included now in guidelines and in some regulations of most of the Appalachian coalfield states. So instead of planting trees directly into the alkaline backfill on which the truck is standing, coal operators, at least in some cases, are compelled to select topsoil substitutes specific for forestry post-mining land uses that are more conducive to restoring the diversity and the productivity of the native forest that was there prior to mining. So that concludes my presentation, and if there's time, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yeah. I don't think that will be necessary, except when a mine is opening up. Because of the steepness of the terrain and the process of opening a mine to begin with, stockpiling topsoils would be necessary. But once the mine is open and working, and these really are, for the most part, large mines, active reclamation behind the act of mining is possible and is actually happening more and more now, and which means that it's much less costly to select and place these topsoils if reclamation is being done pretty closely behind the act of mining, which wasn't always the case in the past. It is a bit of an extra expense for coal operators, but in related research, having to do with grading and compaction, we've been able to show pretty much the obvious that less compaction is a good thing. And furthermore, coal operators save a lot of money if they don't have to grade and compact. So it's pretty much a wash. They save a lot of money by doing less grading, and therefore overall reclamation for forestry as it's being recommended is not any more costly than traditional reclamation for grasslands that's been done in the past. Yes. Black locust does well. We know that it has been a traditional reclamation species. What we're really interested in doing, and we're able to show that we can do, is to put those mid and even late successional valuable hardwood species directly into these mine spoils, if we pick the right mine spoils and place them correctly, and put together a good silvoculturally compatible mix of those native species, despite the fact that some of them are mid to late successional and they're growing well. And from the very start, we're basically jump-starting succession. We don't need to put black locust in and a lot of these other, what I used to call desperation species. Any other questions? Yes.
So one more that, in terms of if you're not putting in and fixing species, do you have enough in naturally in the materials, or do you have to add nitrogen?
No, we don't have enough nitrogen. And that is really the next question that needs to be resolved, is how to plug enough nitrogen into the system. A little bit is added, generally speaking, a little bit of fertilizer, which for the most part is lost after a year or two. A bit of it is incorporated into the ground cover vegetation and is recycled, but it doesn't amount to much. It's important to use herbaceous legumes, which hopefully are not competitive with the tree seedlings, and black locust isn't bad in certain numbers, and I recommend its use about 25 to 50 trees per acre. Not enough to interfere with, this other more valuable stand that I'm talking about. So it's, you can use it as a nursery for nitrogen fixation, and we get about 5 kilograms per hectare in that area, atmospheric inputs on an annual basis. But that's still not enough. It's interesting that weathered brown sandstone seems to have a higher nitrogen availability than the others. Yesterday we heard a talk from, I forgot who it was, one of our colleagues, about geologic nitrogen, primarily from ammonium fixation. What's also interesting, though, is that the unweathered shale, because it was carbonaceous, it actually had a higher total nitrogen content. But the nitrogen in that carbonaceous shale doesn't seem to be as available as a lesser amount in the brown sandstone, which is probably ammonium fixation. But in any case, given those sources, we still have nitrogen deficiencies across the mine fields, and it's difficult to resolve that because those forests will not be nitrogen fertilized.
Do you have some species that do better of the hardwood species you looked at, leaving locust out, but are there some that are less nitrogen demanding, perhaps, or better at scavenging?
I don't know. I don't know. I think they're pretty much created equal in that regard. They all experience nitrogen deficiency. Yeah, and we've actually done some foliar analyses on that, and some fertilization trials, using mixed fertilizers, and the only thing that the trees respond to is nitrogen. Yeah.
We'll hold any other questions for the break. I want to thank you, Jim.
Okay.